Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Welcome to Venus Rising. I'm here with Lynn. And Lynn is not her real name, but we're going to call her Lynn for the purposes of our interview, just to protect her privacy. Lynn is currently pregnant as a commercial gestational surrogate. And she reached out to me a few weeks ago because problems have come up with her surrogacy arrangement as well as her own personal health. So Lynn, welcome to Venus Rising.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always our pleasure to give women like you an opportunity to share your story, because there's so many other women that will hopefully benefit from learning about you and what has happened to you. So first, I'd like to just explain to our listeners, how did you find me and how did you come to reach out to me?
Well, I was having some difficulty in my surrogacy journey. I don't even know if I have a valid contract at this point. I'm already pregnant. So I Googled bad things that happen in surrogacy, against surrogacy, anything I could find. And I couldn't find anything other than your site. And I said, well, maybe somebody might care about us. So that made me happy.
Yeah. And you found the Stop Surrogacy Now site, if I'm remembering correctly, right?
I did.
Yeah. So that is one of the reasons why we're here, is because we know that a lot of women, people in general today, you know, we go to the internet for everything when we have to learn something or figure out a problem or something. So it's not uncommon for women like you, when they get into a difficult situation, to go to the internet to find out who's out there that could help me. So I'm glad you did find me. Tell us, or tell our listeners, how it is that you decided to be a surrogate.
You know, I was enticed by the sense of community. I had 5 healthy births and pregnancies. And the sense of community, you know, the cute t-shirts like Knock Me Up Doc, the pineapples, the excitement of helping someone create a family. And I thought, oh, this is just going to be like any other pregnancy. Everything's going to be fine. I can help someone. And it's not even close to what I thought.
Yeah. And how much did the payment, you know, sort of factor into your decision? I mean, would you have done this if you were not being paid, or was the money a factor because it would benefit you?
I'm a single mom, so money is a factor. I'm a caregiver. I make $9 an hour. That's not a lot that I can give to the future of my daughter. So, you know, maybe a small down payment on a house or some money for her to go to college. So, I mean, money is a factor, but in the same tone, how much is your life worth to you?
Exactly. And we'll talk a little bit more later into your actual health issues right now. But how did you find your, I'll just tell our audience that you are being a surrogate for a single gay man, and you guys found each other not through sort of the normal channels of an agency, if I'm understanding correctly. Is that true?
True. There's an online website where you can put up ads looking for parents, and parents can put up ads looking for surrogates. I interviewed a bunch of different parents, and he interviewed a bunch of different surrogates, and we seemed to be around the same kind of things we were wanting. He wanted to transfer 2 embryos. I was perfectly fine with that. So a lot of our stuff matched up, and we kind of clicked, almost like a brother-sister relationship.
And you've never actually met. You've just had online and like phone kind of communication, correct?
We've actually met in person one time when he came to the West Coast to do some of his screening for the IVF clinic.
And was that a good meeting? You guys got along well?
Yeah, he was super nice, super friendly, outgoing. We went to the movies, we had dinner. It was nice.
Good. And you didn't go through the normal channels as far as an agency and lawyers, and you sort of independently found a lawyer to draw up your contract, correct?
That's correct. I think that agencies, I thought at the time, they charge intended parents way too much, and they're not really doing anything that we couldn't do together. So we found our own lawyer. The IVF clinic walked us through all the testing that they needed. So
Yeah. So you did enter into a contract. I won't say which state, but you entered into a contract in a state where surrogacy contracts are not really protected or recognized as valid contracts, but you still didn't think there was any red flags and that wouldn't be a problem and that things would just go their course.
Yeah. Looking back now, that was kind of a naive decision. And so far for the contract portion, it has been okay. But at any time, it cannot be okay. And there's not a lot either of us could probably do about it.
Yeah. And you currently don't even live in that state anymore. And he never had lived in that state. So you're both operating under a contract that was, you know, executed in a state where you don't live, in a state that doesn't even recognize the contract as a legal enforceable contract. So that seems a little bit sort of precarious to me.
Yes. I contacted a lawyer in our original contract state and he said, enjoy your wallpaper.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh God.
And so you did agree to have two embryos transferred. He used an egg donor.
Correct.
And so you're not the genetic or biological mother of the child. And what happened when they did the embryo transfer? Did you immediately become pregnant with twins?
So everything looked good. We had a picture of the two embryos that were transferred, one boy and one girl. At the first ultrasound, we only saw one embryo. And right now I'm about 8 weeks and there's only one embryo. I don't know where the other one went. There was not any problems that I noticed, but I guess that's pretty common.
Sure, which is why, you know, surrogacy is, one, it's expensive, and so it is often intended parents, or in this case, intended father, who wanted to, you know, hopefully increase his odds of getting a child or two mm-hmm. children for the, you know, for the same kind of cost. And how did he respond when he found out that you were only pregnant with one of the embryos?
He was really, really devastated. I would say that it's almost like losing a child, even though it wasn't developed, but he has his nursery set up already and he had a designer set it up for twins and everything is prepared and now there's only one. So that's heartbreaking for him. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm. And was he upset with you? Did he feel like you did anything wrong or was he just sad in general?
No, I think we were both just trying to figure out like, when did it happen? Why did it happen? Because the doctor, he did not want to transfer two. The doctor was dead set that he only usually does one and that two will increase your percentage of actually having triplets. So we thought we might end up with three. We talked about that as a possibility. We never really talked about, well, it's probably just going to be one.
Yeah. And do you recall in your contract, was there language around selective reduction in case you did end up with triplets if he wanted you to reduce the pregnancy?
There was. And originally we had talked about it before our contract. And he said he would reduce 3 to 2. But then I said, well, think about it. He came back to me a few weeks later and said, if I have 3, I'm going to be happy with 3. So he only would reduce if there was a serious complication to the baby where the baby would pass or where I would pass away.
Yeah. And were you willing to carry triplets?
If it happened, I would do my best. I never have before.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It would be a lot, but...
So take us to the last, you know, week or so. Things, you know, kind of went south with your health. You're pregnant with one embryo. You're a single mom with a 10-year-old daughter. What happened with your health?
Well, about a week ago, I started having some lower back pain, and I said, oh, maybe I have a kidney problem. So I stayed home, drank cranberry juice, drank a lot of water, rested. 12 hours later, it's just not letting up. So I actually drove myself to the emergency room only to find out I have a double pulmonary embolism in both of my lungs.
And so they opted to admit you to the hospital, right?
Yeah, I stayed in the hospital for 3 days.
Wow. And who was watching your daughter while you're in the hospital?
Her grandma was watching her.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, that's, and you're missing work. You're not at home able to take care of your daughter. What, how did they treat you?
In the hospital, it was hard. I had a physician assistant come in my room and say, oh, you don't want to have this baby. You're not taking these hormones anymore. And I said, lady, I almost just died. I said, I don't know what you want me to say here.
So she was upset that you stopped taking the hormones that the fertility doctor put you on.
Yes. But then I had a specialty OBGYN tell me, if you take another hormone, there's no doubt you will die, and stop this right now.
And the intended father, once he finds out you're in the hospital with, you know, pulmonary embolus, blood clots in your lungs, what is he saying?
He's really upset, really scared. I hope you're okay. How's the baby? But afterwards, he was asking me to take a lower dose of the hormones. And the fertility doctor explained it to him that I should take it at least for the next 2 weeks. But I sent him a screenshot from my medical record that says, if you take hormones, you will die. And I said, if I die, you do not have a baby.
So he backed down. And is he okay now that you're not taking the fertility hormones anymore?
They're under the belief that I am, because it's just not a fight that I have energy to explain. And it's not a disappointment that I think I can emotionally take right now, because it's already been probably a week and a half not on hormones. There's been no bleeding. You know, the baby's heart rate was good in the hospital with the ultrasound. So I think it's going to be okay. But, you know, I don't want to take one estrogen pill and think this is the last thing I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're a single mom. You know,
yeah.
A daughter to take into consideration. So per your contract, he agreed to pay you how much for this surrogacy?
$3,400 a month for 10 months.
And the first payment was due upon the diagnosis of a fetal heartbeat.
Correct.
So he's started to pay you.
Yes.
And then you're hoping that the pregnancy will go forward, and then you will not deliver in the state where the contract was executed, right?
Correct.
You deliver in the state where you live or in the state where he lives?
In the state where I live.
Okay, and then he'll come and get the child.
Hopefully he's there for the birth, but I actually am really scared about the birth now because I'm on blood thinners for the whole pregnancy. So I've traded in belly shots and intramuscular butt shots for shots in my tummy of blood thinners twice a day.
Oh, goodness. And then you had a little wrinkle come up when you found out something about his past, which might cause problems with him becoming the legal father of the child. Are you able to talk about that at all?
Yeah, so there's a history. We kind of got along because he seemed like he went through a lot in his life that he overcame, and I went through a lot in my life that I overcame. So that made it kind of easy for us to connect. And so we're trying to do a pre-birth order, but the attorney had told him, well, because you have a past record, it might be a little bit harder. And he said, well, you know, the dad trusts me. And he said, you know, we both know I'm the only biological parent. I know you're not going to keep my kid. I'm not worried about it. And I'm like, I know, but still doing things the legal way is pretty important for your child and yourself. So we're hoping it's just something that he can kind of get around a little bit.
So where are you? I know the last couple of days we've had some email and phone conversations back and forth. Where are you on the, gee, this is the best thing I decided to do versus I wish I'd never decided to do this kind of spectrum?
Honestly, it's going to sound a little bit strange, but in the beginning, I'm like, I'm a fertility goddess. I'm going to make a family. I'm going to do this great thing. And now I'm like, this is not worth risking my life. I thought I would still be able to work both of my jobs. I thought everything would be fine. I never had a problem with a pregnancy. And now I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? I would never do this. If I knew the real risks, if the doctor told me, hey, these are real risks to you, I would have said no. I just didn't know. I was tested to make sure my uterus is pristine and fantastic and make sure my blood work is good and I don't have this and, you know, all this family history, but no one told me, hey, all these hoops you're jumping through, by the way, there's a risk to you.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, the risk of a normal pregnancy, but that's nothing. I just didn't know.
And you didn't know because they didn't tell you. They didn't tell you what could go wrong.
Right.
And I think that my bias is because there's so much money on the table to be made by fertility doctors, by lawyers, by, you know, all the people that make money, that they don't want you to know that this might be risky to your health. So it, I mean, people listening in and hearing your story, whether they be considering a surrogate, you know, I think you even said, I'm going to have a friend of mine contact you because she's thinking about doing this, or intended parents who are thinking about hiring a surrogate. I mean, what would you say to them?
Well, don't do it. Like, number one, there's adoption. There's so many kids that need parents anyway. Number two, do you really want to put your baby inside someone else? Because the fertility doctor said you cannot make her do anything. If she doesn't want to take those hormones, you physically can't make her. And I know that's good and bad. Like, I don't want to harm the baby. I want the baby to be okay. But if I die, there is no baby.
Yeah. And are you still involved in some of the online chat support kind of groups for surrogate moms?
I was online, but I got out of them because everybody's so sensitive. There was a safe surrogate support group on Facebook. I was in that group, and the problem is someone was excited and said, oh, the doctor said I had a pristine uterus. And someone said, oh, there's intended moms in here. You can't say that. And I said, hold on. What are they paying us for? If I didn't have a pristine uterus, I wouldn't even be considered to be your surrogate. So I'm not saying this, me having a good uterus isn't slighting your anything you're going through. It's just saying, yay, we're going to get this baby together.
But they were more concerned that you might offend or hurt the feelings of an intended mom who's infertile.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's not really a surrogate support group.
Yeah. I said, if it's a surrogate support group, why are there intended parents in here?
Yeah. And my experience has been when surrogates that I interact with, and of course the ones I interact with are overwhelmingly ones like you who've had problems, you know, they feel like as soon as they sort of challenge that everything's great and isn't this all wonderful, they're either banned or, you know, shunned out of the group. Because the group only wants to talk about the happy stuff.
Oh yeah, I joined an intended mom group just to see what they were talking about. And this one lady said, well, what happens, you know, I spent $90,000 and I didn't get a baby and I don't think she should get paid. And the other moms were saying, but you're not paying for a baby. You're paying for a service. Otherwise, you know, it could be considered human trafficking. It could be considered this. And she said, yeah, but that's a lot of money. And yeah, I can do it again, but I'm still not getting anything out of this.
Wow.
And I was just like, this is what they think about us. Like, oh my gosh.
Wow.
And like, this is horrible.
That's so sad. And so, for me, it's so demeaning and dehumanizing of women, you know. And one of my films is Breeders, a Subclass of Women, ? And, you know, I hear that kind of stuff and I go, yeah, they just see women as a paid breeder that they hired to produce a child for them, and they didn't get what they wanted, then they feel like, you know, it's sad for them, you know, they lost out and they shouldn't have to pay.
I talked with a few agencies before doing an independent journey, and they were pretty rude. Like, you have to have a BMI of a certain amount. This one couple said you had to be at least 5'10". And I'm thinking, oh my God, are you buying a car? Like, like, this is ridiculous. Like,
yeah, wow. Yeah. It really has gotten to be sort of pick and choose and shopping. And you have to wonder what that's going to do to the children when, if they're even told. I mean, I understand your intended father, you know, has just said that he's not going to be really forthcoming to his child on how they came about.
Right, but here's the thing, like, these parents are forgetting there's 23andMe and Ancestry.com. They're going to swab their cheek and they're going to find their egg donor. What are you going to say when, you know, one lady has like 20 kids, like, hey, mom. And she's like, I didn't even know if any of my eggs worked. That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah. And plus just the trauma when the baby is born, even though you're not biologically connected to this child, you certainly are connected to the child because it just happened. You know, moms have babies in their tummies, in their wombs, and they bond. And when the baby, you know, I was a pediatric nurse for many, many years, and I always say that there's only one thing a newborn knows when they're born, and you don't have to teach them. They know their mother because they've been in your, you know, in your womb for 9 months. And clearly this child, because it's going to be raised by just a dad, as soon as they understand human biology and how babies are made, they'll start realizing that something is amiss and there is a woman out there, or in this case, two women out there that were involved in the creation of this child.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for talking to me. And I'm sure our listeners will find your experience and your story invaluable to their just understanding of why people like me fight to stop surrogacy. But we'll certainly keep in touch, because I want to know how the pregnancy goes and how your health goes. So I thank you for taking the time to talk with me this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate what you're doing and that you're giving us a voice, because surrogates really don't have a voice.
That's right. And that's why we do what we do. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.